The topics, views, and opinions expressed on the air and via All Igniting Change with Barbara Onwine, platforms by host Barbara Onwine Esquire, guests, and supporters are their own and are independent of any organization, entity. Nothing said on the show or any of its platforms constitutes a client-attorney relationship or serves as legal advice, counsel. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to Igniting Change, its platforms, or the show's host. It's time now for Igniting Change, a weekly provocative and empowering program where you, the listener, can ignite change. Now here's your host, Barbara Onwine. Get up,
stand up. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Igniting Change. Oh, we are so happy to have you on our radio show today to be listening to our great guest. Ooh, and we have a hot topic. So I can't wait, but I'm going to allow my mighty co-host, Daryl Jones, to introduce this topic because he has been intimately and forcefully involved in this fight. So you want to hold on. You got to hear what we got to say because we got some strong information for you this morning. With that said, let me bring on my mighty co-host. That is Daryl D. Jones. He is the chair of the board of the Transformative Justice Coalition and one of our nation's foremost civil rights lawyers. Hey, Daryl Jones, welcome to today's Igniting Change.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara Onwine. It's always great to be co-hosting the show with you. And let me tell you, it must be Tuesday. It must be noon because we're talking about igniting change. Barbara, let me tell you. You know, the change we're igniting today that we're talking about is the change dealing with old racist stereotypes, old racist history, whether or not things should be brought up to speed, whether or not we should be paying tribute to historical figures that were racist and suppressive and didn't want to include African Americans and others in the American dream. That's what we're going to be talking about today, Barbara. The title of this show is Public Tax Dollars, Paying for Racist Statues, the Case for Renaming Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge and Some Other Edifices. Barbara, I can't wait to jump into this conversation. But before we do that, Barbara, because, you know, it wouldn't be igniting change if we didn't talk about our successes. We talk, started at 7 a.m. down in Alabama. The 2nd Congressional District has gone to work in their runoff election. As our listeners may know, Barbara, the 2nd Congressional District is that district in Alabama that is nearly 50% African American. It was newly created. The state government in Alabama, the state legislature, fought against this nearly majority-minority district. But the people prevailed. The people prevailed. The state government even fought the U.S. Supreme Court on creating this district, Barbara. So this is really a special day in Alabama for those that are down there and in that 2nd congressional district to be able to go and cast a poll vote, Barbara.
Well, first of all, everybody, you have heard Evan Milligan on our show. He was the plaintiff in this case. People always say that, you know, well, we don't know why you guys fight about voting because black folks don't vote. Well, this is the second example of why that is a lie. Because remember earlier we pointed out to you that the African-American vote in South Carolina's primary increased by 13%. And that was the first vote in the Democratic primary. And what's so critical about Congressional District 2 in Alabama is that the vote doubled, people. It went from 25,000 African-American voters to over 57,000 African-American voters turning up, turning out, showing out, showing what they can do at the polling place. Folks, catch the fever. Catch the excitement. Be part of this year's voting block. We can't wait to help you to be part of everything. And with that said, Daryl, let me also give a shout out to the class of 2024, those beautiful young people, 18 to 35, who we trained in Phoenix, Arizona. A big shout out to our class of 2024 because they continue to show up and show out, and we are so proud of them. But let's get into our show today because this has shaken up the nation. Folks don't know what to do. They're losing their little racist minds because you are talking about renaming Francis Scott Key Bridge. Let's bring on these amazing guests, Daryl.
Absolutely, Barbara, and it ties right into what's happening in Alabama because we talk about voters in Alabama getting to put in place someone who best reflects the district that they live in Alabama.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, when it comes to the naming of public structures with state funds, your tax dollars, shouldn't it be named after somebody who the community can take pride in, who doesn't believe that the community should be looked down upon, not be American citizens, be sent back to Africa, not held in the United States? That's this conversation that we're having today. And, Stanley, we have Mr. Snowden with us. Mr. Snowden, are you there?
I am. Thank you, sir.
And we're so excited to have with us, you know, just an outstanding panel of folks that are with us. The Caucus of African American Leaders is an organization out of Maryland that has called on the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, America's only black governor, to rename, not only rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge, but to rename that bridge. Carl, could you share with us why the caucus is making this demand on the governor and the state of Maryland?
Daryl, first I want to thank you and Barbara for the great work you're doing. The second congressional district that you just finished talking about is an indication why it's important for African Americans to vote. And then when we get people elected to public office, to help them change America from being bitter to better. Our efforts to get Governor Wes Moore and the Maryland General Assembly to change the name of the Francis Scott Key Bridge to Congressman Perrin J. Mitchell is to remind Americans, all Americans, of the importance of being involved in the elections. They, through their vote, will help determine what kind of America we have. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, which we've called to be renamed after the late Congressman Perrin Mitchell, got the endorsement on Sunday of the Baltimore Sun. They, too, believe that taxpayers' dollars should be used not to subsidize racism, but to tell an accurate history of America. So I'm really pleased that the momentum is in our favor. We'll be meeting with the governor in due time. And when we meet with the governor, we will be sharing with him our views as to why we believe naming a bridge after Perrin Mitchell is much more symbolic and important than naming it at a known racist.
Well, now, Carl, people are sitting in there listening to this program, and they're saying, wait a minute, you know, Francis Scott Key wrote the Star-Spangled Banner. Why in the world would we not want to honor someone who wrote our nation's national anthem, or at least the words to it?
I'm glad you said that, Daryl, and both you and Barbara are lawyers. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer, and people need to understand that Francis Scott Key was also the brother-in-law of a man named Roger B. Taney, who was the chief judge from the state of Maryland that wrote the infamous Dred Scott decision, which essentially said that black people had no rights that white people were bound to respect. Well, it turns out that history and scholars will show that it was Francis Scott Key who said that black people were inherently inferior to white people. He also said, wherever black people come, evil will follow. I don't think most Americans know that of him. They have this mythology regarding the Star-Spangled Banner, but they really don't know who he is. And more people learn who Francis Scott Key was, I think the more they'll be inclined to change the bridge's name.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. And, you know, I had a chance to, and as you know, you and I have worked on this issue particularly, for quite a while. But I had the opportunity this Saturday to turn on CNN and And who should show up but a Baltimorean by the name of Victor Blackwell? And he was going over and he was interviewing you regarding this issue. And one of the questions he asked was one of the ones I wanted you to get a chance to respond to. You know, Victor Blackwell asked, you know, if we start renaming these bridges and renaming and revisiting history with regard to the occurrences, you know, should we simply judge Francis Scott Key for how he was in his day, or do we judge him by today's standards with regards to whether or not something should be named after him?
From my perspective, you know, I'm someone who loves history, and I think we pay attention to history a lot. In 1970, when this bridge was first built, there used to be a city called Saigon during the Vietnam War. If you would go today to look up Saigon, you couldn't find it because the people in Vietnam changed the city from Saigon to Ho Chi Minh City. Words make a difference. Symbols make a difference. It's very, very important as we move toward the 22nd century. We remind Americans that the whole purpose of the United States coming together was to form a more perfect union. By that, I take to mean that as we learn more, as we get better, we change. You know, think of the amount of change that have occurred in America. Most people don't realize, but in Baltimore City, the former mayor of Baltimore City was the first mayor to take down a Confederate statue in Baltimore City. People have forgotten that. Some have forgotten that under Governor Larry Hogan, this offensive statue by Roger Taney was taken down. So it's not unprecedented. And finally, Daryl, believe it or not, it's catching on. The United States military, I'm in Annapolis, Maryland, announced last year that they were taking the name of a Confederate off of their building and renaming it to renaming it after Jimmy Carter. Well, I don't think there's many people would argue that Jimmy Carter did more to bring America together than the Confederates who fought to keep it divided. So as we learn more, we should change.
That is so true. And I believe, Daryl, that we have other guests that we also want to introduce. And I want to make sure they're all here so that we can, make sure that everybody's voices are, you know, joining in the great lead that Carl's given to this subject. I just want to, check to see if State Senator Jill Carter is with us.
And I believe she's going to be calling in shortly, Barbara.
Okay, and the same for State Senator Michael Bowen Mitchell?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Daryl, you want to do the full introduction?
Oh, sure, Barbara. Thank you. You know, State Senator Michael Bowen Mitchell, he served in the Maryland State Senate for a number of years, comes from just a prominent Mitchell family in the state of Maryland. When you think of politics in the state of Maryland, it's synonymous with the Mitchell name. He is the nephew of Congressman Perrin J. Mitchell, who we just heard Carl Snowden speaking of with regards to the renaming of the bridge. You know, Congressman Mitchell, and I'm going to let Senator Mitchell do it because he certainly has a wealth treasure of knowledge with regards to his Uncle Perrin. The circuit court, so people should know, the circuit court in the state of Maryland in Baltimore City is named after his father, Clarence Mitchell Jr. So, folks, please welcome to Igniting Change for his maiden voyage, former State Senator Michael Mitchell. Senator Mitchell, welcome to Igniting Change.
I want to say good afternoon to all and all freedom lovers. The voices of Clarence and Perrin Mitchell and Clarence and Juanita Mitchell and Dr. Lily Mae Carroll Jackson are channeling through me that these are the things that we must address history and never let the revisionists allow to hold the day. Just because Francis Scott Key wrote the lyrics to the Star Spangled Banner, we must take into account that as the federal marshal of the District of Columbia, after having written those words, he became the broker for all slaves who had successfully completed the Underground Railroad coming into Washington, D.C. And as the U.S. Marshal for the District of Columbia, he acted as a broker for the slave catchers. and would lock them up in the D.C. jails and allow the slave catchers from various plantations to take these people back and re-enslave them for years, and had it as a profit-making venture. So, but more importantly, in his lineage, being in terms of the and